Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Icy Veins podcast. This is a show where we cover the news from Blizzard games that are covered on the Icy Veins website, which are all Blizzard games, essentially. So we cover the news from Blizzard games, right? I guess that's a fair way of saying it. We have a bunch of stuff to talk about today. Hearthstone making a late Finnish comeback with the, I think it was leaked, but I'm not sure, announcement of the Boomstate project. We have some Mad Max Fury Road, Warchrome skins and mounts and stuff and heroes. We have possibly the craziest hero we've seen in Overwatch with Wrecking Ball and a bunch of stuff in WoW. Of course, the pre-expansion release news are heating up. So we're going to be covering all of this. My name is Patrick Beja, and today I'm joined, as always, by Stan. How's it going, Stan?
Hello, guys. It's doing pretty well. It has been, it's been really busy 2 weeks since we last recorded, so I'm really looking forward to talking about all the news we have.
Yeah, today. Lots and lots of stuff. Aleko is coming to help us cover all of this as well, and especially the Hearthstone things. How's it going, Aleko?
It's going great. I also really appreciate that you guys let me do this at a time where perhaps a little more reasonable, and I can actually talk at full volume. Don't worry about waking up my roommates. So you get the full unfiltered Aleko today.
Yeah, we'll have a special one day where we talk about how interesting it is to schedule the show, given that we're all in different parts of the world, and we all have different schedules between my baby and Stan being asleep until, what is it, usually noon or something like that. And then Aleko,
I have a really weird schedule right now. Now I go to sleep at like 4:30 a.m. and I wake up at 11 or 12. So
I remember that from when I was like 20. Ah, the good old days. Aleko being on the west coast of the U.S. and having like a lot of different things in his schedule. So that will be fascinating. I know that the audience is really aching to hear about all of these scheduling discussions, but unfortunately, we have to cover Hearthstone news and Heroes news and Overwatch news and WoW news. So let's start with the Boomstate project, which is the next expansion for Hearthstone, which was, so Aleko, maybe you know this, wasn't it supposed to be announced like tomorrow and it was leaked? What was the deal there?
So I think there's just a bit of confusion because they had some sort of like announcement of announcement thing that was supposed to come up, but then, if I'm not mistaken, I think that was just for like a tournament or something else. So like everyone was expecting it to be the announcement for the new Hearthstone set, but it wasn't. And then through the official channel, they released the Boomstate project, like, you know, announcement trailer video, which is actually really well made, which has become pretty par for the course, I guess, for like these Hearthstone videos in general. And it features a number of, you know, developers that kind of go through some like skits and stuff that as they're announcing the set and some, you know, the new mechanics and things of that nature. So really worth checking out that video. But yeah, it's a official announcement. One of the things that's surprising is they actually announced the release date of the set itself. So that should be coming on August 7th. Typically they'll announce the set and then kind of leave the community to, you know, kind of do some detective work as to when it's actually going to come out. But they actually just straight up announced it's going to be August 7th, which is, I think, sooner than anyone expected by like a week or two. So that's all great, great news.
Yeah, it's really cool. And the video itself, as you mentioned, is kind of funny. It's so it was released on the Hearthstone English YouTube channel, but it was, unlisted. It was weird. Anyway, we don't know what happened there. I'm guessing there was some mistake that happened at some point, but it doesn't really matter. Dave Kozak is really good at doing the camp crazy scientist, and as the name implies, the Boomsday project, it's all about constructing stuff that go boom, and it's basically from Netherstorm to Mex to Dr. Boom himself. There's a bunch, like, as always, the announcement is really funny, and they have like some endearing dad jokes in there and references to like old, it feels like 50s sci-fi, like the men from Mars and stuff like that. So it was, that was really cool. But talking about the game itself, I don't think they mentioned anything like a dungeon run or a solo mode or anything like that. But what are the mechanics and keywords and cards we can expect from the expansion that they talked about already?
So they've announced two keywords so far. I'd expect those to be the two big ones. They typically do that. Like they'll have two main keywords and then the rest are just like kind of periphery mechanics. The first one is magnetic. And what magnetic does is when you play a minion with magnetic, you can basically use it like a... use all the stats and all the words on the card and just throw it onto another minion with magnetic that's already on the battlefield. Kind of like you're just boosting the stats and fusing them together into one, you know, mega minion, which is really cool because that ostensibly just gives you the ability to throw a bunch of stats onto something and use it right away for attacks and whatnot. So the example of a magnetic minion they provided us with Spider Bomb, which is a 3 mana for a 2/2 mech in Hunter. It has magnetic, and then Death Rattle, destroy a random enemy minion. So if you had a minion with magnetic on the board, you play this, you give the 2/2 to it, you give the Death Rattle to it, you can trade in your minion into the enemy's board and then immediately get that Death Rattle effect and those extra 2/2s worth of stats. So that should be a way that you can use things, I guess, both aggressively and for board control. We're going to be interested to see how the magnetic keyword plays out because it's, I don't know, it's just very different from anything we've really seen before.
So you can use the magnetic minion as a minion on its own or choose to attach it to a magnetic mech. And that it acts as kind of a buff to the existing mech on your board, correct?
Yes, exactly.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I guess it does give you options, yeah.
Yeah, I would imagine that most of the magnetic minions when played on their own are going to be kind of maybe below par, but that when they fuse together, that you're going to start to get these really interesting and powerful compounding effects. Mm. I'd also imagine that you'd have to have quite a few magnetic minions for this to even be a viable mechanic at all. So I'd probably expect this to be like fairly widespread throughout the set.
But I thought, maybe I'm mistaken, but I thought it was magnetics could attach to mechs, whether or not they are themselves magnetic. Maybe I misunderstood.
Oh, yes. Oh, no, you're right. I think I misread that. Yeah. Rereading the... I watched the video. I must have misunderstood, but rereading the text here, they can be played on their own or can be fused with a mech minion. That's on
right,
the board.
Right, right. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I see. Yeah. So it does give you options, and there are, of course, a lot of mechs already in the cards.
Yeah. Okay. That makes
so what's
a lot more
the
sense.
Other? What's the other keyword then?
The other keyword is Omega, which does something special when you have 10 mana crystals. So the example is Omega Defender.
How did you call it?
Omega.
Oh, right, right. Yeah. No, because I didn't understand when you just said right. Yeah. So.
I just wanted to be dramatic about it. But
no, right. But yeah.
So when you play this, when you play something with Omega and you have 10 mana crystals
already,
something with
what? I'm sorry, I didn't understand. Something with
Omega.
Right, right. Oh, okay, right. Yes. No, I see.
I'm sorry. I really need to work on my enunciation.
Mm-hmm.
So the example is Omega Defender.
I'm sorry, what did you say? No, okay, I've got to stop.
Rule of threes, Patrick, for comedy. Three times is funny.
Okay, but that's enough now. All right, I get it.
Okay, I'll try this one more time. So we got a 4-mana 2/6 taunt with Omega. When if you have 10 mana crystals, gain +10 attack. +10. So it would be a 4-mana 12/6 taunt. That is a substantial minion. Of course, these cards have to be somewhat reasonable before turn 10, and this one seems, fairly reasonable. A 4-mana 2/6 taunt, it's not that far off. And, of course, they're going to be completely busted when you play them with 10 mana crystals. The question is, how reasonably are most decks going to be able to get to that? Druids can ramp. I think Druids are probably going to like these cards a lot. Control decks can get there. But this is kind of a more controlling or, a very late game oriented effect.
It's super late game. I mean, if you designed a deck to take advantage of Omega minions, surely you're not going to be able to do very well before you get to turn 10. So this is kind of interesting I'm a Hearthstone noob, but tell me if I'm wrong. This is basically not an anti-aggro, but like an opposite type of deck to aggro, like where you really want to wait until the end of the super late game to develop your effective play style.
Yes, absolutely. I think that you're going to be in a position where you're just like kind of maybe trying to clutch on for dear life as all your Omega cards are kind of, you know, below the bar, and you're just playing a lot of like your removal and maybe some more effective taunt minions going, please don't kill me, please don't kill me, please don't kill me. And then you get to turn 10 and you go, Omega card, Omega card, Omega card, and just completely plow through them. So that'll also going to be another mechanic, which it's going to be so hard to predict how it really plays out until we see a lot more cards, but I'm interested to see them try stuff out like this. So I'm at least excited about this mechanic in the abstract.
Mm, yeah, it seems interesting. I wonder if people are going to be surviving the aggro decks with this one. But all right, cool. So these are the two keywords. Anything else about the expansion that is worth mentioning here?
Yeah, they've already announced two cycles of cards, things that are going to be like one for each class. One of these cycles is going to be legendary spells. So that's going to be like the last major card type in Hearthstone to get legendary as a subtype, I guess, or you know, as the rarity for the cards. So of course, legendary things, you can only have one of them in your deck. And the one they announced was Myra's Unstable Element, which is a 5-mana legendary spell for rogue that says draw the rest of your deck.
How does that even work? I don't like you burn your entire deck. I don't get it.
I think so. If let's say you have 3 cards in hand and 10 cards left in deck, you would just draw the first 7 cards, and then the other 3 would burn, I imagine, and you would be left with 0 cards left in your deck.
So you get a full hand, hopefully, to like you play it when you have, as you said, not too many cards in your hand. So you get a full hand, hopefully, to finish off the opponent and hope that you kill them before the no card damage kills you.
Yeah. So this what this screams to me is a Miracle Rogue. So one of the things that you have with Miracle Rogue already is Faldoray Strider, which is a card that shuffles 4/4 spiders into your deck. So it's a card that when drawn just immediately plays a 4/4 spider. So if you do something like play a Faldoray Strider and then play Myra's Unstable Element, you're guaranteed to draw all of those cards that will immediately play a 4/4 spider into your deck. And besides that, you know, Miracle Rogue already has spells like Prep, which can reduce the cost of Myra's Stable Element from 5 to 2 and just go off with these huge, massive miracle turns, which would, you know, it would draw you Leroy, it would draw you your Cold Bloods, your Eviscerates, all your aggressive spells, hopefully, and, you know, kind of allow you to power out things that way. But, you know, this is obviously a very risky endeavor to draw your whole deck. And I would imagine that, so one of the things I love about the legendary spell idea is that they can have these crazy effects on spells. If you put 2 of those in a deck, you're starting to look at some pretty dangerous game design territory. But if there's just one of them, you can really get away with some more, you know, kind of wacky game designs for this. So I'm going to be really, really interested to see the rest of these. I almost assuredly, these legendary spells are going to be the key cards in a number of decks that will crop up when the new expansion is out.
Very cool. All right,
and then really quickly, there's also a cycle of projects, and these are just going to be spells that belong to each class, which benefit both players. So the one that they announced was for Biology Project for Druid. This is crazy. 1-mana spell, each player gains 2 mana crystals. Whoa, that is a huge effect on the game.
I guess again, if you're trying to play a deck that is late game and you have a lot of early aggro decks in the meta, you play this and you kind of shift the game immediately to 2 turns later, and that kind of diminishes the importance of the effectiveness of the aggro deck, right?
Well, you have to keep in mind your opponent's getting those 2 mana crystals to use first. So your aggro opponent's going to be going from, if you play this on turn 1, from 1 mana to 3 mana, and all of a sudden they're going to be playing, you know, extra cards, and they're going to be able to leverage their game plan more as well. So it's this is going to be a pretty decision-intensive card, where I would imagine there's going to be a lot of matchups where you just jam this out, like, I'm going to be able to use my mana better than you, and then other matchups where you might be a little worried, where you might not want to play this because you think that your opponent is with the mana first, and is going to be able to punish you with it. So
what if you're turn six or seven though, and you need to get to your Omega cards?
Yeah.
And you have to get there quickly, and the aggro onslaught has kind of already passed anyway, but now you need to survive, and that, you know, quickens the pace significantly. I don't know.
Yeah. You know better. Now you're thinking, because if you get to that, point of the game, then their mana crystals are pretty much irrelevant. They only have one or two cards in hand. Then you could jam this, and it's the most efficient mana ramp spell in the game for one mana for two mana crystals. So you have to try to find ways to break symmetry with these project cards, which, you know, I'm always a fan of decision intensive stuff, things that kind of put the force players to make smart choices and, you know, give you more ability to outplay your opponents. So this set is already starting off really, really well in terms of that. It seems like it's going to be a very decision intensive set. And that's probably that's something that people who are a little higher up on the ladder love to see.
Cool. Well, so it's already shaping up pretty well. I'm sure we're going to get a lot of other card reveals in the next few days and weeks. And the set is set to release on August 7th. So, and no single player content, though, apparently, or at least they didn't talk about it. So
yeah, that's a little bit it took a little while for the single player content to come out for the last expansion.
Right,
that was,
but
like,
they announced
for several weeks. They announced it, and then they took several weeks, so there still might be, but they didn't really talk about any.
All right. Well, there's some additional tidbits that we're going to skip over because they're not as important as the expansion, and we're going to go straight to the Mad Max Fury Road craziness of Heroes of the Storm. Stan, what is this? Like, this War Chrome, is it like actually... do you like Mad Max Fury Road or Mad Max in general?
Not really.
What? Get out of this podcast, sir. I cannot be in the same virtual room as you are. I'm absolutely in love with this.
Post-apocalyptic stuff is the best genre. That is my favorite.
I mean, love Mad Max. I like it, of course, but Mad Max Fury Road especially is... And it feels like... So for those who don't know, this is... essentially a series of skins and event that is very much Mad Max inspired. At least it feels like it. What is it? Like, is it an event or just skins, Stan?
So let's start with the patch that went live yesterday. So
okay.
We have a patch that was tested on PDR for 1 week. And the main features of the patch are Ranked Play Season 3, Asmodan and Raynor gameplay updates, and the new skins that come along with those gameplay updates.
So Season 3, I guess, is pretty standard. Rewards as well. We have the dates. Are the War Chrome things already in the game now?
Yes, they are live. The patch went live this night in Europe, I think.
Okay, cool. So, all right, tell me about the Asmodan and Raynor reworks. Let's not go over the specific details, but the spirit of it. Are they deep reworks? Anything notable about them?
So let's start with Asmodan. So they pretty much revamped some of his abilities, giving more control or predictability to his kit. They also remade his heroic ability. It's now called, I think, Tides of Sin. They removed Blackpool entirely, and they made it so that your next Globe of Annihilation costs 50% less mana and deals 50% increased damage. So,
which one is Global Annihilation again?
It's Q ability. That's the catapult thing he throws at the enemies, you know.
Right, okay. That's kind of a bummer, though, if a heroic is just an improvement on your existing ability. Even if it's super effective, it feels like kind of a little bit of a bummer for someone like me who's not very high on the ranks. But all right, so that's Asmodan. What about Raynor, who was also reworked?
So Raynor's update features a change to his E, Adrenaline Rush ability, which activated automatically. It was a passive, and now it gives players more control over his kit. So players can now activate his E ability in order to heal up. It's quite a really interesting change. They also remade his trait, which is now called Give Him Some Pepper, and they maintained the increased range bonus from his previous trait, but now his, I think, every fourth basic attack now causes additional damage, and he and deals also splash damage to nearest targets. So they also embedded new talents to accommodate the auto attack build, and that's probably the most important change. Oh, and also they revamped his Banshee ability. He now only summons one Banshee that will follow him, and once Reyna retreats and the Banshee is not damaged, then it quickly regains health. So that's pretty much all for the Reyna rework.
Okay, it feels like, I mean, Reyna was, it was the character you go through the tutorial with, so it was kind of a noob, super easy character.
Yeah, it's basically the entry hero, so.
Yeah. And
they couldn't make him harder.
I don't think so, but now you have one extra button to press, which is not overwhelming, but it's just like, it felt really nice to have Reyna not... Like, you don't have to worry about anything. You just auto-attack, and that's it. And the change to every fourth shot is not too big, but the fact that you have to press the E button to start your, you know, regen is not something super difficult, of course, but for a new player who has 15 million things to worry about, I wonder if this one isn't going to be one small addition to the different things that he's discovering or she's discovering, you know, playing the game for the first or second time. But if I'm being honest, I have to say it's not too bad of a thing to worry about. And then
yeah,
we
definitely.
Yeah, go ahead.
So he also has a new talent, which makes his E. So now he can activate that, but now there it has a longer cooldown. And there's a talent that makes auto attacks or basic attacks reduce the cooldown of E. So it's more efficient right now, I think.
Yeah, yeah. Okay.
Yeah, but the passive was just really convenient. You know, it activated automatically when you reached a threshold. I don't know what percentage of health was needed missing in order to activate that.
Yeah, exactly. It was basically a super easy hero to play. Maybe not as easy as Lily, which is my favorite hero, or the one I can play the best because you just press buttons like you face mash the keyboard. But yeah. So anyway, all of this is good, but the really good thing is the skins that they added. And as I mentioned, they are very Mad Max-y, especially Asmodan. It feels like Immortan Joe almost, if Asmodan was Immortan Joe, kind of. Fury Road again. And Nazebo has some super chromey look. It's kind of a dream come true for fans of that franchise, but it's really just three skins and a mount, which, you know, it's not like they're doing a new I mean, there are a few other rare skins, but they're not incredible. It's not like a full event. It's just a few skins, so it's cool.
Yeah, but they are really cool because they have like everything new. They have animated themes, animated abilities, even themed mounts, so themed voiceovers even. That's kind of cool to see.
Yeah, cool. So if you like that, go check it out in Heroes. It is now live. The other thing we wanted to talk about was Overwatch, because that was not expected at all. Basically, we knew that a new character was going to be announced, and that was going to be Hammond. We thought it was, well, we knew it was going to be an intelligent animal from the moon like Winston, and we all expected it to be a chimpanzee of some kind. Turns out it's not a chimpanzee, it is a hamster. Like, literally a hamster in a giant bowl-shaped mech. And I don't know why a hamster feels more silly than a talking ape. I'm not sure why it I mean, yes, obviously an ape is closer to people, so it would make more sense that you would be able to make them more human-like, and a hamster feels a little bit more silly. I personally love it. It feels like the reactions were divided in two. The people who are playing Overwatch who loved it, even though they were scratching their head a little bit, and the people who are not playing Overwatch who are like, wait, so basically that game has jumped the shark. Or should we say jumped the hamster? I don't know. But it was not received super well amongst the not playing population, I think, or at least some of them. And the hero itself is kind of crazy. I know, Aleko, you went to the PTR and played a few games. But before we get into gameplay, what do you think about the character? A hamster in a robot, is that cool or is that too far?
Yeah, it's really, having a hamster in a robot's really getting in the way of my realism experience in Overwatch. Like, I play this game for completely realistic strategic scenarios. No, I love it. Like, I think anyone who's complaining about the fact that, like, a hamster in, pretty similar to, like, a D.Va-style mech, except it can turn into a ball and roll around, because then he's a hamster in a ball. Anyone who's not on board with that, I think, is kind of missing the point of Overwatch. They have a lot of humor baked into the game, and, you know, some...
Yeah, they do, but I do agree that it's a step farther, right? I mean...
Yeah.
I don't know. Anyway.
Well, I mean, once you have a talking, like, gorilla going to a hamster in a ball, I mean, at least he doesn't speak English. That would be ridiculous.
He doesn't talk. Right? He just makes little sounds. So it's acceptable.
Yeah. No, and, I think from a character design standpoint, I think you're also appealing to, like, perhaps a new audience. And if it doesn't appeal to you as a type of person who likes to play people or things that are at least, you know, kind of a little more humanoid in terms of gorillas, then I think you're being a little, a little stuck up about it. I think this is a direction that I'm happy to see them go in. They already have robots. Now they have hamsters. You know, who knows what will be next?
Dolphins, sharks with lasers on dinosaurs.
That would be great. I would love a shark with a laser on a dinosaur. I would take that. So gameplay-wise, though, this is where this gets really exciting, because he's unprecedented in terms of how he actually plays and maneuvers around the map.
I would say that
one of the things that, with a lot of the newer heroes, I think is they're kind of on the easier side, the majority of them, maybe other than Sombra. Sombra's pretty difficult, but most of the heroes that have been added to the game are a little more plug and play, like Brigitte and Moira especially. Like, they felt like people you could kind of pick up and at least be loosely effective with them on the ladder when you start out. But that is not the case with Wrecking Ball. His movement is incredibly difficult. It's going to require lots of practice, and it's very fun. You have basically like a slingshot, like a grappling hook that you shoot out, and it's got a pretty decent range on it, kind of maybe similar to like Widowmaker's grappling hook, maybe slightly less far. A little bit less. And then when you're in the ball form and you shoot that out and it attaches to something, you swing around and you have maneuverability with WASD movement to like actually swing in different directions and orient that. And there are bonuses for going full speed, because when you hit people at full speed, you deal extra damage, but it is not easy to latch onto the wall, do like some sort of full speed swing that exactly, you know, hits an enemy or shoots you through a doorway or takes you maybe underneath some sort of passage or through something like that. The aim is quite difficult with the movement. So it's the sort of character that I think is going to require maybe like practice in the practice range, where you just try to, you know, latch onto the right target, swing in the right directions. When used effectively, I think he's going to be a very devastatingly powerful dive tank who can get in, can stun people, bash people up, and then get out again, most importantly, which is something that maybe some of the other dive tanks were not as strong at.
Yeah, I think, I mean, he will probably be filling the same kind of role as D.Va or Winston. It's really a bruiser type dive tank, as you said. So you can gain momentum with the grappling hook if you do it the right way, and then slam down. One of his abilities is to slam down and push people aside a little bit. And you can also gain armor, increasing numbers if you have more people around you. It's the adaptive shield. And the most important part, actually, is the fact that you can switch from ball mode, where you roll around but can't shoot, to mech mode, where you can shoot pretty effectively at will. There is no cooldown, no nothing. So you can, shoot a little bit, turn into a ball, swing around, and you can actually, like, if you attach to a pole where you can move around horizontally, you can, like, swing around forever. It's not like your grappling hook will coil around the pole or something. So there is a lot of mastery to be gained with this tank. It is very difficult to play. You can play him like crazy, let's jump in and see what happens. But yeah, to be effective, it's going to take a lot of practice. And it will be interesting to see how people use him. I'm still unsure whether I love him or don't like him at all. I think it's going to be one of those characters.
Oh, really? I'm not sure if I love him or really love him. That's right. Where I'm at. I haven't played that much with him on the PTR, but he really immediately you could tell it. This is the sort of character that's going to reward practice. He's going to be very decision-making oriented. And those are all great things if you're good at Overwatch. I'm not great at it, but he's going to be fun either way.
Yeah, so. I think so. And then you're going to have the emotes where the hamster comes out of the little hatch and you can actually do like things with the hamster. It's going to be funny, I'm sure. So that's Wrecking Ball. He's been on the PTR for almost a couple of weeks. I would guess he will go live in a week or so, I guess next week. There's also a lot of changes to Sombra. Basically, she has infinite stealth and a recall ability, which is going to change her playstyle significantly. And the other thing is, you remember the Pink Mercy? That was a charity campaign for the Breast Cancer Foundation, I think. I can't remember the name of the organization. Mm-hmm. That was it, right? And so we now know that the Overwatch community collected $12 million, a little bit more even, for the Breast Cancer Foundation. So, Breast Cancer Research Foundation. So that's really cool. I mean, 12 million is not a small number. And of course, there were some people who were like, oh, Blizzard could do more, could whatever. But I think it's really cool. It's just, you know, 12 million. That means, what is it? Like, the skin was $15. That means almost a million people bought it?
Yeah, the community is awesome.
Yeah, that's a significant effort. And the BCRF also said that they never got that big a donation, so they were super happy and everything, so... Let's hope this helps a little bit. You know what? I know some people might have find some way of criticizing even something like this, but sometimes it's good to feel happy about something every once in a while. Another thing we can feel happy about is the pre-patch for WoW, which is going to be available, I think, next week. So basically, last episode when we said, maybe in a week or two, it was 3 weeks. So it's going to be the 17th, right, Stan? That's the confirmed date, or?
Yeah, so moving from hamsters to a game where cows ride dragons and save the world, it's kind of funny to me. Yeah, so the pre-patch
is much, it makes a lot more sense. You know, the cows on dragons, that works much better.
Okay, so the pre-patch is scheduled probably for next week because we haven't seen anything yet this week. So it's pretty safe to say that it will hit live servers next week.
Okay, so let's hope that actually happens. And we're not going to go into spoilers, but there will be the War of Thorns series of quests and storyline, which is what leads to the burning of Teldrassil. And I noticed on the news item that you posted, Stan, the event is only described through the eyes of the Horde. Does that mean only the Horde questline is available on PTR?
No. The thing is that I don't have any Alliance characters on the PTR, and you need character copy for that, you know? But it's beta, and I haven't played really the Alliance part yet, so I did not make a preview of that.
Okay, well, you know what? We don't want spoilers anyway, so we'll have to see. I didn't read anything. I don't want to know what leads to the burning of the world tree.
Yeah, so... we don't know yet still, because Blizzard is holding off the final cinematic, so it's hard to say if the Horde burned it down or if there was some other guys doing shenanigans, you know?
Okay, well, that's good. I guess they will be revealed as soon as the
one thing I wanted to mention about the pre-patch is that our guides will be available on day one, and Icy Veins also teamed up with Bellular Gaming to provide class reviews individually for each class. So Bellular is talking about changes to every single class. He's now done 3 videos, so you can also check that out on our website. The series is sponsored by Icy Veins, of course.
Awesome. I didn't realize that was happening. Bellular is an excellent WoW YouTuber. I really like him. And I think, well, yeah, anyway. So cool. That's great news. So yeah, go check out those guides on the site or on Bellular's channel on YouTube. And about the storyline, I did want to mention, I finished the Before the Storm novel. And I have to say, after initially thinking that you were wrong, Stan, now I kind of think you were kind of right. I feel that the motivations of Sylvanas are flimsy, or they're not well explained. I think what happened in the beginning of Legion was an event where you could absolutely take the side of the Horde or the side of the Alliance and say, you know, this is the reason that happened, and this is why we hate you, because you betrayed us, or whatever. This is, you know, why we are right and you are wrong. And both sides kind of had a point. In Before the Storm, I feel like it's really difficult to get behind Sylvanas's reasoning and way of approaching things. Like, the Horde is disjointed, no one likes one another, it's really just the Forsaken in one side of the room, and then the goblins in another, and the other three races going like, yeah, well, I guess Sylvanas is our war chief now, but she doesn't really care about them, she's plotting. And I don't know, I it's not that I don't like the book, it's that I don't like the direction they're taking Sylvanas. Because we already had, you know, Garrosh, who was a terrible war chief. So two in a row is starting to create a pattern. So I don't know.
I just hope she doesn't end up like Garrosh 2.0.
Yeah, I hope there's some kind of switch in the storyline, but I guess we'll
see. Yeah, I would really love to know more about her, because the book tells you nothing about her background, you know, her choices and stuff like that. You get plenty of stuff about Anduin, what ultimately decisions he had and how he came to them. But as far as Sylvanas goes, there's virtually nothing. And we also get nothing in the game, so we'll need to wait and see.
And I think, I mean, the book is still pretty interesting. There are some, I'm not going to spoil, of course, but there are some unexpected characters that show up and that do unexpected things. So if you're into WoW lore, I still recommend the book. It's just the Sylvanas side, the Horde side is a little bit eh. But yeah, some cool stuff I can't wait to see reflected in the game when the expansion launches, or actually very soon. What else? Oh, there's the Duelers Guild, which I didn't even realize that was in the game. I don't know if it was announced before, if I missed it, but it's essentially 1v1 PvP, which, you know, is very unbalanced. We all know this, so take this as it is. But it's basically the Brawlers Guild, you know, those PvE encounters, you would play 1v1 monster. In the arena, and everyone could watch, but this is like PvP. So it's 1v1 PvP arenas that you can queue for and then stand around and watch, and there are some cosmetic rewards and stuff like that. This is pretty cool for a certain subset of the PvP population, I'm guessing, which itself is a subset of the WoW population. But those players who like 1v1, you know, PvP, the dueling, are going to be super happy, I'm sure. And then we have the sets from Uldir, the first raid. I wouldn't ordinarily talk about them because, you know, they don't have set bonuses or anything like that, so it's just a cosmetic set of, well, items. But the reason I didn't want to mention them is that, you know, the leather and cloth sets are kind of whatever. They're variations on the same, but the plate and mail sets are super good looking. Like, they might be my favorite sets from the, maybe not the entire game, but certainly one of, you know, at the top. Have you seen these sets? They look really good.
Yeah, of course. I think those, I really don't like the thing that they went down from class sets to four armor type sets. That's kind of let down. But the only set I like is the mythic golden variant of the cloth set.
The golden one. Yeah. You know, in Eastern Europe, we kind of have the image that people like golden stuff. I guess you fit the stereotype. Perfect. but you don't like the mail, the chainmail one?
No, I don't like it at all. But I mean, Battle for Azeroth is full of great gear, so their weapons are extraordinary. The team, the art team, did a really outstanding job. So if you think that those sets may be dull, just wait. Even questing gear looks really gorgeous in BFA. Oh, so.
That's really cool to hear. There's even that Scorching Sword, like Taibu's Scorching Sword, which is essentially a lightsaber, not quite.
Yeah, but there's even a butterfly catcher weapon.
Oh, like, really?
It looks ridiculous, yeah.
What else? There's the this video, which is basically the entire history of WoW, which developers go through. It's really just three of them, Hasek Ostas and a couple of others. They go through every expansion and talk about the technical challenges, the places they were in their gamer's life, and they go through everything. It's a video by Wired. It's super long. It's like, 50 minutes?
Yeah, 1 hour, I think.
Yeah, about an hour. But I loved it. You know, I've been playing WoW since 2006, I think, 2005. And it was such a trip down memory lane and hearing about what they had to do technically and all of this. I would really recommend people go check it out. I really loved it.
Yeah, it's mostly tech talk, but really insightful.
Yeah. And the fact that you go back and actually take the time to listen to a little bit of history from every expansion really gets you back to those days. So that was really fun. And finally, one last bit of news. It's kind of random, but I did want to mention it. It's about multi-boxing, because, of course, PvP is going to be super important in the expansion for those who enable war mode. But one of the issues with PvP is that if you have a multi-boxer, for people who don't know, a multi-boxer is someone that will play multiple characters at once, who bought multiple boxes of the game is where it comes from. And so what they can do is playing multiple characters and direct them to attack the same target in one instance. So what used to be very common on PvP servers, not very common, but for multi-boxers, they would roam around the world or even in battlegrounds. But at battlegrounds, it's less problematic because if you have five characters doing one thing, you still have the other five and the other faction, but in the world you might be 5v1, and so they would enable the instant pyroblast, was it Omen of Clarity? I can't remember the one that would make it instant on their five characters, so that would insta kill almost anyone. And that is obviously not very fun when you're playing PvP. You're like, you see someone and then five pyroblasts on your face and you die. So that is basically disabled because they have disabled the ability to follow a character who is engaged in PvP combat. What that means is, you know, auto follow. So the character will follow you. So you will need to move all of your five characters individually, which becomes very impractical. So that is a simple, but I think pretty effective move for this, because yes, it's not great for multi-boxers, which it's still supported, of course. It's just for that one instance of PvP combat where it becomes an unfair advantage and they've essentially disabled it. So you can still multi-box and do dungeons and everything you like. In PvE, you can't really practically do PvP anymore. So I think that's a pretty
good point. So I'm really interested to know if it was possible to accommodate click to move in order to as a workaround for the disabled following combat.
I don't know. I mean, it's possible, but I think you would get to issues like if a character is behind a wall or something, or behind a tree, they might get disconnected from the rest of the group, and then you would need to worry about them individually. So I think it's going to make it difficult enough that unless someone finds a workaround, but it's not going to be a constant issue on PvP servers or in war mode, because if they hadn't done that, I think it wouldn't have been that uncommon to see, you know, multi-boxers with just three characters. If you have three super bursty DPSs, then it nullifies the fun of the PvP. So, yeah, I think it was needed.
Yeah, it's great to see improving balance in terms of world PvP.
Yeah,
I agree. As a part of the whole entire PvP overhaul in Battle for Azeroth. So,
So there you go. I think that's going to be it for WoW, and so that's going to be it for the show. We are, of course, going to be waiting excitedly for the release of the pre-patch next week, and there's a bunch of other things, as we mentioned, probably Wrecking Ball coming out next week, and Hearthstone is going to have more card reveals, I'm sure, and then the expansion itself for WoW is coming in about a month, and we'll have the Hearthstone expansion before that, so the summer is not going to be dull, that is for sure, but we'll be with you. We'll be covering the news, of course, as always. And thank you so much to both of you for being with me and helping me talk about all of these different games and announcements. Before we leave, as always, can you guys tell me where we can find your work? Let's start with Aleko.
Yeah, you can find me at Aleko underscore P on Twitter. twitch.tv/Aleko_P. Been streaming a bunch of Hearthstone, and of course you can find me in the mostly in the Hearthstone section over on Icy Veins.
Perfect. Stan, what about you?
So you can find me at Herospawn on Twitter, and of course on the Icy Veins website covering news from Blizzard Games.
Perfect as well. For me, it's Not Patrick on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. And if you enjoy my banter, you might enjoy Pixels, which is my general gaming show. I just talk about, gaming news from the industry. It's always a blast. And if you're interested in that, just check your podcast app, go to the search field, and look for Pixels. You can subscribe just from there. And there are things happening, of course, in general gaming as well. So I'll see you there. Thanks so much for listening. Don't forget to go check out Bellular's guides on his YouTube channel. And obviously, the Icy Veins, the Icy Veins podcast, the Icy Veins website for all the guides and all of the news that you might need for Blizzard Games. Thanks for listening. We will be back in a couple of weeks. Talk to you then. Bye.
Bye.